hard to believe that we're already back at the combine. It feels like I was just here last year. And so we have a new guest. You've never been on the Bengals Beat podcast, but I'm a big fan of your work. And I figured that you'd be a really good person to have on to talk about the Bengals because, as Peter King mentioned, you are an up-and-coming reporter who has done a great job over the last 2 years building your profile with The Ringer. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on my first guest of the Bengals Beat podcast from the Combine, Ben Solak. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Kelsey. Yeah, no, it's the Combine gets quicker and quicker every year because the Super Bowl gets later and later every year. Yeah. And so you just turn around, you come here right fast, and all of a sudden it's the offseason. Time to go.
So tell us a little bit about how you got to the position that you are in with The Ringer. What's your background?
So I was doing a lot of draft coverage, actually. I've been at the Combine a bunch for like draft stuff before I was at The Ringer, and I did Eagles stuff, so I grew up an Eagles fan. But I was just like blogging, you know, just kind of doing the hustling thing and like working a ton. And then I started The Ringer in summer of 21. I was super young, real good opportunity. The people there are really, really incredible. Like the editorial team and the copy desk, the production team, like they invest a lot in you, which I'm really grateful for. And so I didn't like, you know, no big J school, no big, you know, playing football or whatever, just blogging, just trying to do the thing as best you can. So I owe a lot to the people at The Ringer, like editors and all those guys. They've been great for me. And yeah, back here at the Combine now, just, you know, trying to meet new people and do new stories and keep it rolling.
So as I mentioned, you cover the NFL from a national standpoint.
Yeah.
So how does that work in terms of how do you feel like you're still able to keep up with each team and not just know like the bare minimum where you know like enough that you feel like you're obviously not going to know as much as a beat reporter does, but I would imagine you have to know a decent amount about each team.
Yeah. So like for me coming up, like it was a lot of the film watching, right? Like I don't like to go through, like I try to get to Tuesday and I've watched all the games and I've gone through the coaches' film, and a lot of my background is like evaluating the players and evaluating the schemes. And so for me, like a lot of my understanding comes from just watching the games and then seeing the players. And so you kind of have that background where you're making sure you're consuming the games, watch the film, and then you got to know who the good beat writers are, right? Like, you know, you got to know the Kelseys of the world where you go and you say, okay, like they're going to give me good, you know, Bengals information, give me some of the good Bengals color. But for me, like the being embedded in the league is just being like constantly consuming the film and constantly watching the games. Like that's where the stories that interest me are, is in the X's and O's and the chess match of it all. And then when you get to a position where you're speaking with coaches, you're speaking with general managers, you're not going to be like, hey, you know, you're going to franchise tag T. Higgins, because like everybody's asking about that. That's obviously a big deal. People are like, hey, like, you know, Dax Hill. Dax Hill had some moments this year. He's improving. What do you like? Where was Dax Hill going? Like the loss of DJ Reader. How did that affect the running game? You know how to ask stuff that's like B tier and C tier stuff. And that's the sort of stuff that interests me.
So you kind of teed us off there. Let's talk about the Bengals a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I feel like I've seen so many people say like this is the most important offseason in the Bengals franchise history. But I don't think anybody looks at it that way, because every year is important to the coaches and the like scouts. Like they don't look at it and they're like, oh, this one offseason is more important than
I'd argue that year they had the first overall pick and took Joe Burrow. It was probably the most important offseason.
I think so too.
This one doesn't really register to me up against that one.
Well, and then last year it was different. So last year I'm sitting here talking to media analysts, and most of it was about what Joe Burrow's contract is going to look like. So they get that done. So based off of what you watched from the Bengals last year, what do you feel like you thought was what told the story of their season other than Joe Burrow getting hurt?
Yeah, right. So injuries are obviously the big thing. You have Jamar missing time and you have T missing time. I think that the defense taking the step back that they did, and kind of after Von Bell and Jesse Bates leave, and you know, Lou had been really clear about how much he asks of his safeties, how important that spot is. But until they were gone, you kind of didn't realize like, oh man, like the Bengals gave him more explosive plays last year than anybody, right? Like they could not keep a roof on things. And you didn't realize just how smart those guys had to be, just how well-tuned those guys had to be until you saw that secondary be young and grow over time, right? Like I said, like, you got like Jordan Battle reps that made you feel like he was coming along. You got, you know, Nick Scott came in. You had moments with him. You say, okay, we're starting to feel good. But in general, like the absence of Bates and Bell was a real big thing there defensively. And so the figuring out the youth in that secondary and how they how they need to get that group back up to the level it was quickly. So that way that they're still competing and they're still relying on that defense to make runs with Burrow and Chase and with T. Higgins. Like, that's what's important to me, because so much of the Bengals' postseason success, especially that year they made the Super Bowl, like, Joe was playing great, clutch moments, whatever, they were winning those games defensively. They were winning those games on the defensive side of the ball, man. They were winning low scoring, one possession games by gunning it out in the second half. And they did not have the capacity to do that this season, despite the fact that they gave money to Trey and they gave money to linebackers. Like, they, you know, they secondary to me is it was the storyline last year. We're watching that going, man, like, Jesse Bates, that was a Jenga piece. You pulled him out and this tower started to come down a little bit.
So do you feel like they missed Jesse more than they missed Vaughn?
Yeah, I do. I think because the explosive plays and you have Jesse putting the roof on top of the defense. I also think Jesse was both those guys were shot callers. I don't want to take anything away from Vaughn, who's a great player. But Jesse, man, especially watching him in Atlanta this year and how quickly he stepped into that defense, started to take stuff over. Jesse had his best season as a pro this year in his first year in Atlanta. That is a very rare thing to do. Really brought to my eyes just how smart of a cookie that young man is, right? He sees the whole field really, really well. And so to me, I think it was Jesse the player and Jesse the center fielder and Jesse the rangy and the ball skills. But it was also just Jesse with the intelligence, Jesse with the ability to be a quarterback on the field for that defense, that I feel like they were really missing that veteran presence and that understanding. And so I was a big Jesse Bates fan when he was in Cincinnati. I thought he was a great player. Him going to Atlanta and so successfully, quickly, seamlessly becoming he was first team all pro for me. Like, that, my appreciation for Jesse Bates has never been higher.
Well, so that's interesting you say that, because mm-hmm. I started on this beat in 2021, the year the Bengals went to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And all I heard about was that the Bengals don't traditionally value the safety position in terms mm-hmm. of paying. So it never seemed like it was ever going to get close with Jesse.
Yeah.
Like, it was always, even if he comes back on the tag, it's going to be after that. I wonder, and Lou had this famous line last year when he talked to the media. He was like, it's going to be a dark day if we lose Jesse or Vaughn. And yeah. I know, having talked to people around the team, they didn't think they were going to lose both of them.
Yeah.
I think they thought Jesse might be a pipe dream, just because they knew what he was asking for and the fact that they never really got close on their negotiations. But I don't think they were prepared to lose Vaughn. Mm-hmm. And both those guys were captains. And I think that what's interesting is, because I wonder if the gaps that they had at safety last year and how much it messed up the play of the linebackers, like mm-hmm. Logan and Jermaine Pratt, like, took a step backwards
yeah.
because I don't think they fully trusted what was behind them. And then it also affected the cornerback play. So I'm just wondering now if the front office changes their way of thinking about the safety position in terms of
yeah.
how they would value it moving forward. Like, if they could redo the last 2 years, would they have given Jesse what Atlanta did?
Yeah, or at the very least made sure we're not going to lose two guys at one position, right? Because whether it's safety, wide receiver, edge rusher, anywhere in between, you hate to lose multiple starters in the same season, because then you have to recreate chemistry and you have to install two new guys, and there's just a ton more moving parts
mm-hmm.
versus, okay, you lose a Jesse prices himself out, whatever, great player, wish you all the best. Let's make sure we keep Vaughn, so
right.
whoever we put in for Jesse can lean on Vaughn, right? And Logan and Jermaine can lean on Vaughn, and we still have some degree of continuity, right? And that's why you see the really good teams. This is not to say the Bengals are or aren't this, but the really good teams, you know, we have a guy coming up in free agency, we're going to draft a third-round dude. So that way, if he leaves, we can just start to right. cycle more guys in and everything. And they try to keep, you know, always like one step ahead of the position, so you don't end up like the Bengals did, where kind of the floor comes out for you and your defense is in free fall because you lost that pair of guys.
Well, and this kind of wraps up this conversation, but there's so much of it is they didn't keep Vaughn because Vaughn's second year, the guaranteed money he got from Carolina was way more than what the Bengals were going
right.
to give him. I just wonder, so much of what the Bengals have done from like an organization has changed in the last couple of years in terms of going out and spending money in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
All of it's changed really since Joe Burrow has gotten there and since Zach Taylor has gotten there. And I just wonder if mm-hmm. things will continue to change, or if there's going to be certain things, whether it be like guaranteed money in the second
yeah.
year, where it's like they don't budge because they've got a gem of a quarterback and
right.
they want to make a Super Bowl run again. And in order to do that, they're going to have to change some of their previous
yep.
ways of doing business.
Change isn't easy. You that Orlando Brown deal, they mm-hmm. did everything they could to make it look like a Cincinnati Bengals deal, right? So, like, you know, you kind of, it comes incrementally. I think that the unfortunate truth is that once you pay Joe, which you're always going to do, no brainer, You know, if you're going to pay Jamar, you're going to try to pay T. Some, you got to get cheap somewhere, right? And so you start, you go to your coaching staff and you talk about this, you talk about that. You look at Lou Anarumo, who's your defensive backs coach. It was a defensive backs coach for a long time before it was a DC. And you say, hey, Lou, you're going to have to freaking figure out the secondary for us. Like, we got to take money out of somewhere, right? And yeah. So, like, that's the nature of it, right? Like, if you, I grew up an Eagles fan. Eagles don't pay linebackers. Don't do it. Well, you got to take money out of some position, right? If you're going to go big contracts on the offensive line, big contracts to the wide receiver, right? So that's the nature of accounting against a hard cap. You're going to have to take money out of somewhere. Maybe they thought, all right, secondary-wise, we'll be able to make it work with 1 year of data. I don't know. Maybe we start trying to find some other spots to take some money from.
Well, and it also didn't help that the guy that they replaced Jesse with in Dax Hill doesn't appear to be a safety in the NFL. Yeah. I think he's, after Mike Hilton leaves, I think he's headed to be the slot corner.
And appropriately so.
Yeah. So I think that was tough. But this then brings up the question of, with free agency coming up, because they spent on Nick Scott. He got benched like the fifth game of the season in Arizona by Jordan Battle.
Yeah.
So do you pay someone in free agency, another veteran? Because then you're wondering, well, maybe we should have just paid Vaughn. Like, it's going to be so interesting to see what they do at safety, because they're, either way they put it, they're basically going to have to admit they got it wrong.
Yeah.
By whether it be drafting another one early or if they have to sign a veteran one. They haven't gotten it right in replacing Jesse and Vaughn so far, because Nick Scott didn't turn out to be what they wanted him to be or need him to be. Mm-hmm. Dax Hill hasn't developed the way they needed him to be. So where do they go at safety? Mm-hmm. It's like they're kind of, it's all coming back full circle.
Yeah. There's guys. There's Geno Stone out of Baltimore, who's like, you know, he was the third safety for them, who's now going to be a free agent because he's going to be behind Kyle and Marcus. And I think that he'll hit the market. I think Xavier McKinney with the Giants will hit the market. He's a little pricey, but McKinney's a good player. There are guys. And, like, we've seen safety as Jesse Bates being an example, but also you think about your Justin Reeds and you think about your Marcus Williams. We've seen safeties pop from team to team and immediately be successful. It's a spot where if you're a veteran, you've seen it and you get it, you can go and be successful in year one. There's some spots where free agents don't translate as neatly, and safety is one of the spots where it tends to. And so I would not mind a veteran safety there at all. I just think getting veteran in the room overall is going to be handy, because right now you got Mike and a bunch of kids, and yeah. It'd be nice to kind of, you know, have another voice that's been around the league for a little bit.
Before we switch to offense, let's talk about the other main talking point for Cincinnati in free agency. It's going to be defensive tackle. They weren't nearly good enough up front in their division.
Yeah.
And DJ Reader obviously got hurt, and you don't know if he's going to return to the form he is. He's 30. This is going to be the second time he's ruptured his quad. Like, you can't just say he's going to come back and that's going to fix our problems. In my opinion, I think the Bengals need two, like, good, solid defensive tackles. But those are expensive pieces, and there's not a ton available in free agency. And they also need some guys who, in addition to being really good against the run because of who they play in their division, need to be able to generate some pass rush. Mm-hmm. Because right now, last year, the Bengals' pass rush was so one-dimensional, dependent on Trey Hendrickson, because you've got guys like Joseph Osai, who never took the jump that they were supposed to. Miles Murphy did okay towards the end of his rookie season, but they've got some things to figure out on the interior of their defensive line to fix their run defense and their pass rush.
Yeah, it's a good, late teens is a good spot in the first round to start going for those defensive tackles. I think that's about the range where you're going to see Byron Murphy, the Texas tackle, go. Then you start to have the Johnny Newton is the Illinois tackle spot. Like, that, to me, they probably move back a little bit for Newton. But in general, they're at the spot where I think the first defensive tackles in this class are going to go. And so if they want to go rookie-wise and get a guy who's got, right, the three-down juice, has, right, or he can be a run defender for us, and he can be a penetration player, be a disruption player, help out Trey Hendrickson, that's the draft-wise, that's, I think, the spot for it. Like, there's not going to be any safeties there that I think are worth the price. I think defensive tackle is where it does start to make sense. You can get guys in free agency, but it's rotation guys, right? Unless you're paying unbelievable money to go get Justin Madubuike, which
so
they don't want to do.
That, yeah. Well, and the Ravens said they're going to tag him.
Yeah.
But so you think the better strategy for the Bengals to fill their defensive tackle need is the draft?
I think they have a good shot to get a guy in April. I never like to walk into the draft saying, okay, well, in the first round, we'll take a defensive tackle, because you never know, right? Exactly. Like, you start making trades, guys start popping around, stuff happens. You got to go through free agency and feel like, okay, if we put just these guys out there, we'll be okay. You know what I'm saying? We'll survive. Like, this will be acceptable. This will be fine. But to me, like, if I'm looking at the Bengals right now, I'm looking at interior offensive line, interior defensive line as the spots that start to make sense for their needs and the draft boards, they're in the late teens.
So what about the edge rushing piece of this? When you watch the Bengals, what did you think of Miles Murphy? What do you think is kind of the issue with Joseph Osai? Like, it's one of those things where he had that preseason game where he sacked Tom Brady and then got hurt. And it was like the greatest preseason game alive. And then every time you'd ask Lou Anarumo about him, he'd say, you know, we need him to stay healthy. Like, there was never any comments that would lead you to believe that he was close to working his way into more of a rotational player. And towards the end, he was a complete non-factor. And then obviously Sam Hubbard played through a really bad ankle injury. But in my opinion, I think they need more from the pass rushing standpoint to compete in the AFC.
Yeah, and they've only got 1 year left on Trey's deal, right? And then he's up. Yeah, so you want to have some guys in the hopper because you don't want to be put in a spot where you don't know if Trey's going to come back or not and you have no one waiting for you. Osai's tough because he's twitchy as all get out and he's long, and so he can disrupt. And, like, I'll never forget the rush he had against Mahomes late in the championship game 2 years ago, right, where he just whooped Brown right off the ball, right? And he's like, okay, guy, like, not a lot of guys in the league can win like that. You can't play all three downs. We can only stick you out there on third and 17 to do what you do. Fundamentally, you're not going to see enough ball, right? You're not going to see enough time. So if we don't like you against the run too much, then you're not going to be out there on first and 10. And that might be a passing down where we wish that you were out there, but we don't know it's passing down until they drop back. So we can't put you out there yet. So there's some versatility, and there's some being able to I think, clear the bar on run and pass downs that would allow him to see more snaps. And then it's the health thing, right? If you're going to win by being twitched, you're going to win by being long, right? You're going to have that quickness and that length to you, but you're going to be hurt, and you're not going to have the same explosiveness in, you know, 12 of the 17 weeks of the season. Then you're always theory, right? You're never someone who's seeing it in practice. We can hang our hat on it. We can rely on it. We can account for it. We expect it to come. You're always just going to kind of be something in the background that, like, maybe works for us. And so it's been unfortunate with his injuries. I think he could have come around nicely, but the health's been a problem. Murphy, to me, was always going to be like a fine NFL player. I don't think they took Murphy, what, 30 overall, was it?
No, 28th.
All
the drafts kind of blur together
it's tough.
In my head.
You would love to get
well, looking back now, they wish they probably could have taken Sam LaPorta.
Yeah. You would love to be able to get a double digit sack guy that late, but that's you know, you're usually rolling the dice on that. It's usually crap shoots. Murphy to me doesn't read like that sort of player. He reads like a good two early down player and a two down player, and, you know, useful against the run. He can be a power rush guy and a looper for you, but he's never gonna be like a high sack number guy. That's more your Trey Hendrickson. So to me right now, they don't have like a second high sack guy in the hopper. That's a hard thing to draft for. In this class overall, it's a hard thing to draft for when you're taking at 18 overall. You'd prefer to be like top 10, top 15. And in free agency, you can go find one, right? But if a guy's on the market at edge rusher, something's wrong, right? I mean, there's something going on with him. If Brian Burns makes it, absolutely sell the house, but there's no reason Brian Burns should make it. Other than that, you know, you're kind of trading for Hassan Reddick, seeing if he's got enough juice on him to give you another 10 sacks. Like, you're kind of more in the B and C tier of guys than you are actually in the A tier.
So let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. When you look at the Bengals, when they had Joe and when they didn't have him, what did you feel like was the one area that maybe held them back?
Left guard. Right. I think that I think Volson was struggled for them over the course of the year. I think they kind of wanted someone to win that job, and he did win that job in camp, but I don't think he played at the level you'd like for him to play to. So I thought interior wise they had issues. Brown is a fine player. I didn't really understand why they felt like they needed to go get him, and I think Brown always has some pass protection issues, but I think Volson was your biggest problem there at guard. I honestly thought, like, in terms of, like, creativity and, like, the offensive coaching staff solving problems, and this wasn't just a year where they were like, all right, Joe, go be amazing for us. Jamar, go be amazing for us. Like, they did a lot more creatively, right? They, like, invested a lot more in the screen game. They got in more different formations. Like, some of the, like, I remember for the 22 season, we were like, they were at that point where they were like, if they were under center, they were 80% run. If they were shotgun, they were 80% pass. And we were all like Callahan, Zach, we know what you're doing. Like, you have to hide stuff, guys. Like, come on. Like, you can't just, like, be like, Joe, you know, go out there and solve all of our problems. So I thought, like, creativity wise, like, the coaching staff had a really good year. They had a bounce back year. They made a lot of chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, right, with some of the injuries that they had to deal with. But I thought they had pass protection issues. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to shore up that fifth spot on the offensive line in a significant way this year and feel like they can leave Joe back there and not have to worry about him getting hit as much, getting hurt as much. But like with the way that running back rotation played out and how Chase came along over the end of the season, some of the play you got from the young receivers, like there's stuff to like for them to have like a really strong bounce back on that side of the ball.
Well, so they needed Orlando Brown because things got kind of blurry with Jonah Williams, and now he's more than likely going to test the free agency market and probably be the highest paid right tackle in the free agency market this year. So you could potentially say the Bengals have holes at left guard and they need a starting right tackle because that's been a revolving door for them the last couple of years. But the issue is the Bengals have struggled to draft offensive linemen dating to they thought Jaxon Carmen was going to be someone and he can't even you know, get on the field.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of work to do in a lot of areas that are very expensive or where they're drafting right now at 18. It's going to be hard to get a cream of the crop right tackle or a premier defensive tackle.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable offensive line class. It's one of the best that I can remember. And so to like, they're not going to go get Joe Alt or Talese Fuaga, like some of these top guys, but there's going to be dudes, right? Like if they want to go the Amarius Mims right out of Georgia, who's like a rawer than sushi, but oh my God, he can move like you wouldn't believe. Like he plays right tackle out of Georgia. He's a sight. He's so fun to watch. They want to go a little like tackle guard hybrid, right? Troy Fatanu out of Washington. Get a guy who can maybe play right tackle for you if he can't, then maybe does the guard thing. The last time they did that, obviously it didn't go super well. And so there's a ton of options. Jackson Powers Johnson, who is the Oregon center, who I think he can play guard for you. Then he can take the center job when if Karras comes up next year. Like they got tons of options to the offensive line. And so if they lose Jonah and they feel like they're walking in with multiple gaps, there'll be guys for him at 18. So the class is out of this world.
So if you had a guess right now, and I know we need to see what they do in free agency, but if you had a guess what position they draft in the first round.
I'm pretty sure right now, like sports looks wise, defensive line is the slight favorite. And I think that does make the most sense to me because you brought up edge. I brought up defensive tackle. I think there's needs at both spots. I'd be surprised if it's not a trench player on the side of the ball. That'd be the thing for me. There's a chance that they love a corner who falls to them, right? There's a couple of guys who are expected to go. Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Those guys are expected to go more like top 10, top 15. If they fall down to them and like, okay, maybe they want to really invest a corner like because they're losing Cheeto, sure. But other than that, like there's not going to be a safety for you. They don't need to go wide receiver that heavily. Like I expect them to be trenches, and appropriately so.
So the other two positions I wanted to talk about are the running back spot and the tight end spot. Because once again, the conversation about what are they going to do with Joe Mixon is the conversation again this offseason. And then tight end, they tried it. We talked about places they try to get cheap at. They try to get cheap at tight end.
You didn't like the four-man rotation? You didn't have a good time?
The Irv Smith pick didn't work for them to get him in free agency last year. So if you had a guess in terms of like level of importance for the Bengals to get right this offseason, is it getting a starting caliber tight end that's a really good playmaker or adding maybe two running backs and doing more of a running back by committee style with Chase Brown and ultimately end up moving on from Joe Mixon?
I'd prefer tight end. I think that, you know, in the seasons past where Boyd was there, you knew your top three targets were probably going to be Boyd, Higgins, and Chase. Like, that's the guys you wanted to get the ball to in the passing game. So now I think third target is probably going to be open for them this season in terms of who starts to get fed a little bit. And I think when you look at the best offenses and we look across the league, it's really handy to have your third target be your tight end because it gives you a lot more positional versatility. It gives you the ability to play 12 personnel, hide your intentions a little bit more. Like I said, that offense kind of getting more complex, getting better at hiding its intentions. You'd like to have a tight end you can do that with, right? Because you can go get Dalton Schultz on the market for $7 million and you get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're fine. You just go get a veteran guy, plug him in. I know, like, that's what they try to do with Irv Smith, but Dalton, like, is a little better than Irv Smith. So you'd be okay. Like, to me, like, that's the approach. Running back is interesting to me because there's so many dudes available and they always are, and it's a great market. And if they went and invested big in running back, I wouldn't mind it at all. They wouldn't read like a bad play to me whatsoever. But I tell you, I liked what I saw from the young man at Illinois this season. He played really, really well. The question is, how much volume do you want to give him, right? So I think, yeah, you go and you bring a veteran in and you make sure you're prepared for a committee and whatever. Chase not the biggest guy, but if Chase could take 150 touches next year, 275, 200, I want to give them to him because the kid's lightning in a bottle. Like, he is fun to watch.
So if there was an underrated player, it's like we talk about Jamar, Joe, mm-hmm. all the time. Really only talk about Trey Hendrickson in terms of like pro level. Do you think that, is there an underrated player, whether it be like a DJ Turner, Cam Taylor, Britt, like a first or second year player that you just absolutely love on the Bengals roster that you think is due to take a big leap?
Cam Taylor Britt, without question. Absolutely. Cam Taylor Britt's got it. He does. And when you're corner, when you're a wide receiver who's got it, it's very clear. Like, it happens week over week, and you get better and better week over week. Corner's inherently an erratic position, right? It's such a hard position, such a reactive position. You go up against the best athletes in the entire league playing wide receiver. Sometimes you get got, right? And I think it's tough for fans sometimes, like, you know, oh, this corner's great. And every so often he loses. And like, I thought he was great. Like that, even the best corners do. Like, you have to know it's a tough position. Cam Taylor Britt, when he got it off the field as a rookie. And just the size and the vision, the tackling, the understanding in zone, like the light bulb is very clearly there. And now it's just a question of let's round out some rough edges on technique, let's round out some rough edges on aggressiveness, let's learn how to calibrate. But Cam Taylor Britt's got it, and I'm confident in him continuing to get better and to be a corner that you can trust to reliably make plays, take away top receivers. I love me a Cam Taylor Britt.
And I know that they were excited about DJ Turner. He kind of hit a rookie wall about halfway through the year, but I think they feel good about their pairing with Cam and DJ moving forward.
Loved DJ coming out of Michigan. Had a big grade on DJ, and he landed with the Bengals. And I was like, yeah, freaking of course, because he's versatile and he's smart as heck, right? And so they'd be able to put him in a lot of different spots. And he's aggressive. He's physical. He'll go and he'll hit a guy for you. I like their future a lot with DJ, with Cam. I thought Battle played. Like I said, that Battle came along nicely over the course of the end of the season. There you start to see that work for him. I don't know physically if he's like ever going to be like a high caliber player, but he gets it. And so you talked about, like, okay, like, you know, Mike, you know, is coming up, contract going to come up, maybe put Dax Hill in there. They have a young base that I think can work for them. Just the secondary is a very mercurial spot. So you got to kind of keep everybody together and everybody's confidence level high and make them believe, make them trust and get that chemistry. And I think you'll see that unit rising tide kind of lift all boats.
So where are you putting with a healthy Joe Burrow and hopefully a couple of improvements along the trenches? I mean, what do you think about the Bengals next year in terms of them in the division? I mean, the division was the best division in football this year. Where are you placing them next year in the AFC? What do you think the expectations are?
So I think, you know, they came in with expectations to win the division, right? And there hasn't been a three-peat division winner since 95, I think it is, which is my entire lifetime, right? And I've been around for a three-peat division winner in AFC North. So, like, this is the nature of what happens, right? It's a highly competitive division. You give an inch and you lose, right? There's so many guys. I don't think they're better than the Ravens. I don't. With how the Ravens are built and with how the Bengals are built, I like the Ravens roster a little bit better. I'm a huge Lamar Jackson fan. I think he's an excellent quarterback. I think the Bengals have a good chance to draw even with them, right? Do this offseason right, and then it becomes a question of how much is the defensive coaching staff loss for the Ravens hurt them, right? Because they have some guys depart. You have Brian Callahan depart from Cincinnati. Who can recover from that well? Who can account for that well? And so I think I'll walk into the season expecting the Ravens to win it, but it'll be a narrow edge. I think the Bengals will be the second team there. I think they're better than Cleveland. And Cleveland defensively was outside of their minds this year. I don't think that's sustainable. I think that's just due for regression naturally. And then Pittsburgh is just go 500, be a tough out, beat you for some reason in week 5. We'll see what they do at quarterback. They got a lot of questions. But the expectation should be to contend for the division. The expectation should be playoffs. And especially if you're bringing T back on the tag and you're saying, all right, one more year, let's run it back and let's see, then it should be a high intensity year. It should be a, hey, like, this might be it for us with this nucleus. Like, let's go and let's make the run we know we can make. And so I'm excited to see him next year.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Love this conversation.
Thanks, Kelsey. Appreciate it.